We are recording. My name is Ashley Tabolo. I am here with my husband, Joseph Giangreco Murata. The date is July 9th, 2021. The time is 1:10 p.m. We are in our car on the road between Buffalo, New York and Watkins Glen, New York. Joe, I want to briefly review the informed consent and deed of gift with you. This interview is for the COVID-19 Oral History Project, which is associated with the Journal of the Plague Year COVID-19 Archive. The COVID-19 Oral History Project is a rapid response oral history focused on archiving the lived experience of the COVID-19 epidemic. We have designed this project so that professional researchers and the broader public can create and upload their oral histories to our open access and open source database. This study will help us collect narratives and understandings about COVID-19, as well as help us better understand the impacts of the pandemic over time. The recordings, demographic information, and the verbatim transcripts will be deposited at the Journal of the Plague Year, a COVID-19 archive in the Indiana University Library System for the use of researchers and the general public. Do you have any questions about the project that I can answer?
None at this time.
Taking part in this study is voluntary. You may choose not to take part, or you may leave the study at any time. Leaving the study will not result in any penalty or loss of benefits to which you are entitled. Your decision whether or not to participate in this study will not affect your current or future relations with Indiana University, IUPUI, or the IUPUI Arts and Humanities Institute. Participating in this project means that your interview will be recorded in digital video and/or audio format and may be transcribed. The recordings and possible transcriptions of my interview, copies of any supplementary documents or additional photos that you wish to share, and the informed consent and deed of gift may be deposited in the Journal of the Plague Year, a COVID-19 archive in the Indiana University Library System, and will be available to both researchers and the general public. Your name and other means of identification will not be confidential. Would you please offer a verbal confirmation that you understand and agree to these terms?
Yes, I do. I agree.
Okay, great. So let's get started then. Can you please state your name?
Joseph Thomas Giangreco Murata.
And the date and time?
It's July 9th at approximately 1:15.
PM. Okay, so what are the primary things you do on a day-to-day basis? For example, your job or extracurricular activities?
My primary job is I'm a mechanical engineer at a company in East Aurora, New York. I work a typical kind of 8 to 5 workday. And in addition to that, I have a side business that I do upholstery work. And I do that typically nights and weekends as time permits. Obviously, I also help to take care of family and those responsibilities obviously take an amount of time as well.
Where do you live and what is it like to live there?
I live in Williamsville, New York. In terms of what is it like to live there, I don't know. It's a very, it's a bit of an older neighborhood. Very quiet, I would say. When I say an older neighborhood, I mean in the sense that there's a number of older families that have been there for a long period of time, maybe the original owners of the house, and then there are some new families that are moving into these houses, but that's what the neighborhood is like. I don't know, it's a pretty quiet neighborhood, frankly.
Is it urban, suburban, rural?
Suburban.
Okay. you first learned about COVID-19, what were your thoughts about it? And how have they changed since then?
So I first learned about it because of coworkers. I was working on a project with a Chinese company, and I had a number of coworkers who were planning trips to China shortly after the new year, if I'm not mistaken. Shortly, that would have been January 2020. And they had flights being canceled and things as a result of what was happening. I'd say that was when I first really learned about what was going on. My thoughts at the time, I mean, I recall, again, a lot of this was conversations with coworkers, so I recall having discussions about, you know, risks and, you know, very early information. I mean, it stayed relatively consistent, but I'd say I remember early on there being a lot of discussion around the primary people who were impacted were older people, right? And I'm younger, right? And so I was not terribly concerned. I distinctly remember a conversation with a coworker where I said, I'm not terribly concerned about myself. And he had an older parent and, or grandparent, I should say, you know, and so he was very concerned about that. And I guess I hadn't originally thought of it from that perspective. So I said pretty early on, my mindset changed there, being more concerned about other people and the impact on them, despite the fact that, I don't know, it's maintained pretty much all the way through, I should say, that it wasn't really the most dangerous thing for younger, healthy people. I think that answers the question.
Yep, and what issues have most concerned you about the COVID-19 pandemic?
There are a lot of things that concerned me. I guess I'll start by thinking about, obviously there are health concerns, as I previously mentioned, particularly for older family members and, you know, people who have pre-existing conditions. That concerns me. So I had concerns there. I also had a lot of concerns from a economic perspective. You know, there was a lot of slowdown at my job for a while. Didn't impact me as much as other people, but, you know, anytime that there's a economic slowdown, that's concerning to me. And so the long-term effects of that were a concern and, you know, to some extent still are a concern.
Did the COVID-19 pandemic affect the employment of people you know? You said yours was stable, but if so, in what ways?
So, I mean, my dad was certainly impacted. His primary job is that he's self-employed, owns his own business. He certainly had a tremendous reduction in, you know, the summer of 2020 in his job.
And what is it that he does?
He owns a business that he does service for, primarily for the marine industry, detailing boats. In the winter, he, you know, winterizes those boats, preps them in the summer for people. So there was a big slowdown there. He was heavily impacted. You know, I've had conversations with my parents about the, financial impact on them as a result of that. Thankfully, you know, none of my direct coworkers in my facility were directly impacted. I certainly know of people in, you know, overseas, Italy, India, that type of thing, where there were some people who were temporarily laid off. It didn't impact me directly. Like I said, my job was always very busy. And I mean, I have a relatively small social network of people, so thankfully within that group, I don't know of anyone who was tremendously impacted in the sense that they lost their job or they quit their job or something, but I know that that did happen to a lot of other people for sure.
And let's switch from your employment to family and household. How has COVID-19 affected you and your family's day-to-day activities, or has it?
You saying currently or during the, like, the worst part of the pandemic?
Either, both.
So, you know, I'd say for the majority of 2020, I worked from home. Starting in March, basically. I did go in occasionally over the summer, one or two days a week, if I recall correctly. But, you know, as a result of working from home, that, you know, that clearly impacted day-to-day experiences, right? You know, I didn't go into work. I would work from home. After Charlotte started going to school, Charlotte's our daughter, after she started going to school, you know, there was certainly more of a demand for, you know, being more self-sufficient as a, you know, family of the three of us, I should say. I don't think that we depended nearly as much on parents or grandparents, things like that, to help with things because of trying to limit interactions. And then, you know, that's since gotten a lot less, you know, restrictive. I think both your parents and my parents are no longer nearly as concerned at the moment because everyone has gotten vaccinated. And then in terms of current impact, I mean, there's a fairly minimal current impact at the moment. I still am wearing masks at work, for instance, but it's not required anymore. It's optional for people who've been vaccinated. I think I still minimize going in certain places and doing certain things, but not nearly to the extent of before.
And what did you and your family, our family, do for recreation during COVID-19, particularly during the worst parts of it?
Well, I had a lot of fun doing puzzles.
We were just about to talk about what you and our family have done for recreation during COVID-19, particularly during the worst parts of it.
Yeah, so like I mentioned, I recall we did puzzles was something that we did for sure. I did a renovation project. I redid a bathroom. I know that's not really recreation, but it's recreation for me. We also as the weather started getting better, I'd say after like the Easter time frame, we started taking the dogs for walks when the weather was nice. We did some outside activities that I think we otherwise wouldn't have done. You know, just because we weren't going and doing indoor activities. Those things included, you know, we would go to parks or things, or I don't think I ever really convinced you to go for a bike ride, but Charlotte and I tried to do some more bike riding, those types of things. Charlotte got a scooter, so we did some scooter rides and so forth. You know, those were the type of things. I remember there was certainly some time in between, let's say, April and maybe June where I wasn't terribly busy from an upholstery standpoint, and we watched more television at night than I think we ever did for a while. So that was sort of recreation as well. I think that's it.
Okay, and how do you think COVID-19 has affected your community?
Well, I mean, I guess when you say community, I tend to think of like our, you know, the people that we interact with. But then I also think of the city as a whole, or, you know, town as a whole. So the people that we interact with, I think that, like, that community of people, for sure there was a lot of fear and things for a while, and I think some of that is still lingering. I think that there's a fair bit of division that resulted, and I think that that's still being worked through in the larger community. You know, there was, of course, a lot of like political differences, we'll say, between groups of people. That was particularly obvious to me with people that I work with, where there was certainly a lot of people who chose to, you know, minimize COVID in general and, you know, think it almost not real to some extent. And I think that we still have and will probably be dealing with that at a larger community, for an extended period of time, because I think that's not going away anytime soon, unfortunately.
And why do you think those people felt that way, that COVID was fake or a hoax or just not nearly as devastating as it was made out to be?
Well, I think that you have a lot of people who, you know, clearly were influenced by the politics of it, right? You know, I think we can't forget about the impact of, you know, Trump as a president and the way that he handled things early on, and of course the polarizing nature of him even well before COVID, right? So I think that you had a lot of people who, not to generalize, but who are supporters of him, who, you know, just took what he said and didn't really critically think about anything else that was going on, and that just continued. So I think there's that. I think you also have, you know, people who might be somewhat like me in the sense that they, you know, aren't immediately impacted. Their job wasn't impacted. You know, their coworkers weren't impacted. They didn't see a family member who may have died, or, you know, have friends or things who had lots of people who have got sick or who were very sick. And so it's easy then to just say, well, it doesn't impact me. I don't see it. It's not real, I think. You know, I'm not saying that's my opinion or that's how I see things, but I could see how you, if you were in my position and you didn't see people or know people who were really, really impacted or who became very, very sick or who died, you might choose to not believe it.
Didn't you have coworkers overseas in India and Italy who had some problems with COVID, either personally or with their families?
Sure, yeah. I mean, there still continues to be. I mean, I have coworkers in India who are still working from home and have, you know, things have gotten a lot better in India in the last month and a half or two, really. But, yeah, for sure that, you know, I know of a colleague, an Italian colleague, who lost both of his parents. So, yeah, I mean, for sure, I've seen that.
And more so than just COVID-19 affecting people's health itself, but in what ways do you think the pandemic in general has affected or is affecting people's mental or physical health?
I mean, I can certainly see how people who are much more extroverted than I am would be very uncomfortable being unable or unable, I guess is the right word, to really interact with other people. How that would take a tremendous toll mentally. I mean, it's not hard, you know, if you listen to news stories and things. For instance, I listen to NPR fairly frequently. For a while, they were talking an awful lot about mental health, and, you know, they have interviews with lots of people who have personally, you know, said that they've had to change the way that they behave and to change the things that they do, find other ways to keep their mind occupied. You know, I think that there are a lot of people who are mentally impacted by being alone, right? I mean, I'm lucky in the sense that I have, you know, my wife, you, and Charlotte, our daughter, and so even though we were, you know, quarantining and by ourselves for extended periods of time, we weren't really alone. You know, if you were alone by yourself and didn't have that group of people to interact with, that could certainly be very taxing.
And you mentioned that you listened to NPR. Was that your primary source of news during the pandemic, or did you have multiple sources of news?
I would say for sure NPR was by far and away my primary source of news. You know, especially early on, it was something to listen to the daily press briefings from Andrew Cuomo. Those were broadcast on NPR for a while. And even after they were no longer broadcast there, I would still seek those out to some extent. Same thing with the local. Mark Poloncarz would do a press conference occasionally as well to talk about what's going on. Those were also sources of information. I definitely did not use any other like web-based news sources. Like, you know, a lot of people, you know, look for news on Facebook or things like that. Like, that was definitely not even on my radar from a news source. And I don't personally watch a lot of TV or cable TV, so I didn't use that as a news source either.
You mentioned listening to the press conferences of Poloncarz and Cuomo. How do you feel our local and state governments handled the pandemic?
I think reasonably well. I mean, it's not a easy situation, of course. You know, state government, obviously very early on, was heavily focused on things in New York City because of what happened there early on. I don't know, I think things were done reasonably well. There were some things that I was frustrated with, some things that I thought were done well, but on the whole.
Can you be more specific about the things you found frustrating and the things that you thought they did well?
Sure. So one thing in particular that I found to be frustrating, for a while there were these state guidelines for red and orange and yellow zones. I think those were the colors. I could be mistaken. But there was a definition given for what those zones meant. And then those definitions seemed to be absolutely useless when it came to applying the zone colors. I remember Erie County had relatively high hospitalization rates and new case rates, and you know, there were a few press conferences where it was, okay, we are in this yellow zone and it means this, and by the definition as I understood it, we were easily within to the zone that, you know, would have mandated more strict lockdowns. And yet there was a hesitancy, or, you know, after the fact, I think there was some other qualifying criteria that was either, I don't want to say made up or announced or whatever, but, you know, my opinion, based on what I was being, you know, what I was finding on positivity rates and hospitalization rates, there should have been no reason not to place the county in a higher lockdown category than it was in, other than the fact that people were afraid of the political ramifications or the economic ramifications of it, and weren't considering, in my opinion, as much the health ramifications of it as they should have been.
Okay, and what did you think they did well?
I mean, I think that in general, communication was pretty good, right? I guess maybe I didn't pay attention to it because I wasn't in some other state, but, you know, of course, early on, there was a lot of discussion around supplies and procurement of those supplies and trying to distribute those supplies up and down the state. I think that my understanding of what happened was that the state did a pretty good job of trying to, you know, have hospital supplies and hospitalization rates equalized. I know that didn't work as well as it probably could have very early on in New York City, but I'd say once you got towards the maybe May, June timeframe, I think that, you know, there was a better sharing throughout the state of supplies and equipment and things like that. And I thought that was an example of something that was handled pretty well.
And you touched on this a little bit, but how did you feel about the handling of the pandemic by the federal government?
I mean, federally, I think that the message was incredibly inconsistent. You know, you had people like Anthony Fauci saying one thing, and then you had contradictions by the president, you know, minutes later. So I think that was certainly not clear. That led to a lot of confusion, I think. I don't know. I didn't put as much of an emphasis on the federal response because, frankly, I didn't expect a whole lot from the federal response, just because I saw what was coming out of the office of the president and didn't think that it was particularly helpful.
And has your experience transformed how you think about your family, friends, or community? And if so, in what ways?
I don't think that it's transformed how I see my family, friends, or community. I mean, I think the only thing I will say is I probably am more accepting of, you know, somebody's opinion of how they want to handle, you know, their own personal health. And, you know, I probably would not be as quick now to judge someone if they said that they don't want to do something because, you know, they're not comfortable. Like, I probably am more accepting of that, but that's about it.
My final question is, knowing what you know now, what do you think that individual communities or governments need to keep in mind for the future?
Well, I think that, you know, it's apparent how important messaging is. And I know there's never going to be a consistent message, but, you know, that would be the thing that I would say is, knowing what I know now, try to be more consistent in your messaging, if possible, because it just leads to confusion.
Okay, is there anything else that you wanted to add to this interview?
No.
Okay, well, thank you very much for your time and your contribution to the archive.
Thank you. Have a good day.